Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, Boneheads, and welcome to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard. And we do not need to hear the intro music again. No, thank you. All right. I love John Page. I love him a lot. He's a great dude, but we don't need to hear the intro again. Anyway, now that we've taken care of that little piece of business, welcome to Rollin' Bones. Tonight we are going to kind of, you know, cut right to the chase here because we have a great crew here. Right now we have with us, some great luminaries that are going to be talking about role-playing games here. Before we get into that though, remember to like, share, and subscribe if you like what you see here. If you want to continue seeing Rollin' Bones and all of the great things, that I try to bring you guys on here, that is a way to help us out and support us. It's the best way, in fact, to get people out there to know that we're doing this. And then, of course, you can follow me on social media. You can see there at the bottom, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch are the best places to find me. We'll be going over to Rumble here in a little bit once I start making short-form videos. Rumble will be a place where I'm going to start pushing people to subscribe. That's also going to be a place where I'm going to be live streaming once I have enough subscribers that it is free to do so. So with my nonsense out of the way, let's go ahead and bring on the people that you guys are here to see because we have a banger of an episode tonight. I will bring them in one by one, and I hope you guys will join me in giving a warm Rollin' Bones welcome first to the brain behind Mud Puppy Games. He is one of the creating forces behind Mutant Crawl Classics. You know him, you love him. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Rollin' Bones, Jim Wampler.
Greetings, programs.
All right, and next up, he is one half of Silver Boulets. You guys have seen him on here several times. He is a legend. He is Ian McGarty.
How's it going?
And his tag team partner from the state up north, Rocky Gardner.
I get second billing again. Yeah.
Just like I arranged it in the contracts.
And last but most certainly not least, a man who is day by day, episode by episode, gunning for Levi Combs' title of most appearances on Rollin' Bones. Also gunning for Tim Mathias because I have no idea which one of them has the record right now. But ladies and gentlemen, Luau Lu.
How's it going, Boneheads? I'm going to have to amp up my product production if I'm going to catch up with Levi, man. He's always got something coming out all the time. It's hard to make it on here that often.
Absolutely.
As a workhorse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is certainly prolific. But yeah, I mean, we've got, I wanted to get you all together. Ian and Rocky reached out because they've got a Kickstarter that's going on right now. But I wanted to get a whole bunch of you guys on right now just to, you know, have a fun hangout, chill stream, talk with you guys about all the projects that you're working on. And of course, to get people to take a look at Ian and Rocky's ongoing Kickstarter. So let's actually start with that. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the information here for everyone to see. But you guys currently have a Kickstarter that is live for Fantastic Geographic issue number 3.
Look at that art. Oh my gosh. So jealous. Yeah, man. That's
Chet Minton. And he knocked it out of the park in there. You're only getting a glimpse of the full cover in that, but a lot of references to articles that are in the magazine as well. So that's like,
yeah, I'm going to need his contact info so I can steal him from you.
By all means, he's great.
Yeah, the art behind Ian was done by him too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is also, and it's actually, if you look carefully, you can see a reference to the Sphinx right in that art that's there. So yeah, it's kind of like we told him what we wanted to do, and he just lit up with it. He loved it, so he really crushed it with this.
That is fantastic. Are you guys going to work a page of glaives into that product somewhere?
No, not this one. Someday maybe, but not yet.
Now, speaking of the full glory of the full cover, we do have that here to share with you guys. So here's a bigger view of it for those of you out there who needed a further taste of what you can expect on this particular Kickstarter.
Look at that beauty.
Yeah. And then this speaks more to Chet's design too, is that like talking to him, like he left us space for headers and stuff like that. He just did some stuff that makes this way easier and better for us too. So he killed it.
Yeah. I love that cover. It's
now, as far as Fantastic Geographic goes, we've talked about the first two issues on the show before, but what can people expect from the third issue that you guys have on Kickstarter right now?
So we have, this one is all about languages in one form or another. There's an adventure in a library. There's a cipher article. There's several articles about books in dungeons and in the game. Riddles. I wrote a riddle article. There's a 5e adventure in there, also dealing with ciphers and riddles. So everything is language based in this. That's the theme for this issue.
And it's in a lot of the things, like you say, and like he's like, oh, there's an article on riddles, but it's then the adventure kind of shows you how you can do that and then builds in some tiers of support and shows you how Rocky or I would do that in gameplay. So that, so, you know, someone who says I can't run those, there's kind of some steps in there for how to do both of those things with ciphers and riddles.
Yep. The ciphers and riddles both show up like predominantly in the adventure. So you can see easily how to translate it.
Gotcha. That's kind of an interesting hook to bring people in, because it's one that you don't see a lot, but it's also one, just like the idea of language and languages is one that's kind of in the DNA of fantasy as a whole. When you consider, you know, like J.R.R. Tolkien's academic career before ever writing Lord of the Rings, language is very important when it comes to role-playing and fantasy as a whole. So, you know, props to you guys for kind of pulling out a theme like that to kind of hang the issue on.
Yeah, every issue we kind of try to pick one theme and then show people how we would, enact it with between the adventures and the articles that we use to support it. Lots of maps as always. Mm-hmm. So that's, and this is a level that's it's a three story library. This is sort of where the cover lich is found. So that's that adventure. That one is written for old school says Castles and Crusades right now, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Did we say it's Castles and Crusades, but the monster blocks are closer to OSR than the standard Castles and Crusades module, but it's 100% Castles and Crusades as far as the rules go. But Castles and Crusades fits with, you know, OSE, Swords and Wizardry, BX, all of them are along the same vein. There's literally plug and play for any of them.
Hmm. We have a random book title generator. The tables that you guys put in these issues are always a lot of fun. I kind of raved last time we were on about the table that you put up for finding a horse in town and how much I love that one. But here we have a random book title generator, which you always have that one player who's like, I'm just going to start pulling books off the shelf and see what kind of, you know, sounds interesting. And you have to make stuff up on the fly. So those of you who don't want to make stuff up on the fly, here is your ticket out of that.
You gotta tell them first, though. Listen, you get two book titles you get to read. That's it. I'm cutting you off.
Yeah, we've all been the DM that's been there, right? Or the player, either way. But you need.
And as a player, you desperately want to know. You're like, what's one of the books? Like, like, immerse me in your world. You're like, oh, shit.
Or the guy that won't stop. Wait a minute, I already got that title. This is the second printing.
How come every ancient library that we explore has 50 Shades of Fae?
That's a good one.
And also this, just, you know, more stuff from the library map, kind of a outline of what we have. And then the Polybius Square. Oh, this is another one that's
nice.
Cool for yes, people, especially with the theme that we have going here.
The samples from the Cypher article. I squeezed as much history out of it as I could without like really getting in depth and talking about ciphers and stuff, because I could do that for a long time. But I kind of like showed you how I would use it and how I would put it in, and then gave you an example. So you've got it right there. You could enact it right at your table very quickly if you wanted to.
And I think I should mention real quick that these are actual pages from the layout for the zine. I'm at about 80% done with them right now. They don't have page numbers and stuff yet, but as you can see, we're pretty far along in the process already without even finishing the Kickstarter yet.
Yeah, and at this point, it's putting art in and moving, you know, moving things from manuscript to layout. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I really have to commend you guys on. And I know I've said this on the show before, but you guys kind of have the art of, by the time it's on Kickstarter, it's pretty much ready to go. So we're just going to fire them out to you. You know, that's really something to be commended, that you guys are, professional in that regard. So when you back something, for those of you who have not ever backed something from Silver Boulets, that's what you're getting, is, you know, that kind of rapid delivery of a finished, professional, nice looking product that is really going to, you know, enhance the game that you're playing in ways that you might not even expect.
Yeah.
And Rocky actually just got the physical copies of our last MCC, and those will be going out shortly.
Yeah, this week. I'm just waiting
waiting on magazine bags.
Yeah, I'm waiting on some of the
layer of the Batman, right?
Hey, yep. Batman.
Can I get to the front of the backer shipments, guys?
I can take care of you, Jim. Thursday, kids have half day. That's when everything's getting packed.
Put them to work.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So you're talking. Charge them rent, and that's still a deduction. So.
You guys were talking about it. It's got a section on riddles. Recently, I had to write a riddle for a piece I was doing for somebody. What advice? I mean, obviously, I don't want you to give away everything you're going to tell in the magazine, but what sort of advice, or what's a piece of advice that you were giving people for using riddles and adventures?
Well, this is a perfect time to just verbatim read that article. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but make sure that you stay in the world. There's nothing more jarring than being in a fantasy world and talking about a car and a riddle. Yeah. Make sure that it is simple. Like,
add physical clues if you can.
Yeah. So you don't write an adventure bottleneck, which is a mistake we've all made.
And never hide something behind a riddle that has to be found.
Yeah.
Ever.
Always have it above. Or if you do have some sort of crutch that's easily like leaning on the wall in close reach so that you don't bog down your game. Mm-hmm. Generally, too, as a rule of thumb, like
if they've talked about a riddle for 5-ish minutes and don't have an answer, you should be applying a clue. Like, that's a long time to wait for them to figure it out. But like 3 to 5 minutes is that's when you're like, uh-oh, I would start to add some hints.
And it varies a little bit, because with my Mega Dungeon background, like, I don't care if they solve the riddle right then, right? There might be a clue in another section of the dungeon. And that's something that I talk about a little bit in the article too. It matters what kind of adventure they're in. So, you know, if they're on a linear path, they need to be able to solve that riddle quickly. If they're in a hex crawl or a mega dungeon, you probably have interspersed clues other places to help them get through that riddle.
We've also both used riddles as like clues to find items that aren't, you know, that are just like Easter egg items that like, oh, I want that sweet sword. My like clues are often hidden in riddles, so that it's not something you have to chase. But if you figure it out, you could be like, wait a minute. Yeah. Let's go to that mountain and grab that sweet item. I think it's there.
Players are a strange bunch, man. They'll ignore the main entrance and find some way to weasel in the dungeon that you didn't write into the adventure. But if you place a secret door, they will never ever find it.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of like the magic bullet of riddle writing is it seems like, you know, if you make something that's dirt simple, your players will still argue for 10 minutes about whether or not it can really be that easy. And so it really can be something that is challenging in a bad way, in a way that keeps people from like actually playing the game. So that's obviously a tightrope that you have to walk there.
Well, Rocky and I both like physical puzzles and assembling things. We ran a 4-table game at a convention once where we rounded up two other buddies of ours to DM, and it all like coalesced into a single table at the end where they each assembled. They all had a piece that would link together, and good stuff happened if they did that. So it was, but they had to, you know, figure it out amongst the groups of people. So we like doing puzzles, physical things if you can get them. That's the one thing I don't like about playing on Zoom is I can't hand you a puzzle or hand you something you know, it's a clue.
Yeah, handouts are nice. Another place that I really like to use riddles a lot that I didn't cover in the article is the command word for a magic item. Giving a riddle as the clue to on how to unlock a magic item is always a lot of fun too. I do that frequently in my mega dungeons also.
Nice. I applaud your efforts. Anything is better than I roll a perception check.
Yep.
We're attuning. I've attuned with it. Now I know everything.
The attuning rules are funny too, if you, because you really just got to sleep with the thing. You just got to like, and then it's attuned, and you can know, you know what it is. Just got to spend the night with it.
I did. There was one time I had a tuning be like a role play thing because the item was cursed, but it was basically like, this is an axe that's haunted by the spirit of the previous wielder. And so the attunement process was essentially the player making a deal with this malevolent entity.
Well, they kind of like took the teeth out of cursed items, and like those early edition games, you got a cursed item and it was bad, like really bad.
That works in the post-apocalypse too, because going all the way back in D&D to like your intelligent sword, and there's an ego check and stuff like that. In post-apocalypse, you just give whatever the device is its own AI, and now you're emergent role-playing with your own magic item.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you guys think about that? I love the idea of a like magic item having a personality and interacting specifically just with the one player that's wielding it. I like that as kind of a general rule for like magic swords and stuff like that. What do you guys think about that?
I think if it's done right, it can be a lot of fun. Depends on what purpose you're serving. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, but it definitely can. I've used intelligent items and items that hassle the players quite a lot. So
you're, I distinctly remember your cowardly invisibility cloak in one of your adventures, Ian.
It's a classic.
Absolutely.
What other sentient? There's a lot of different sentient things. You can do fun things with sentient. That's what I like about Mutant Crawl Classics is like the AI is that you just make anything have an AI. And it's suddenly smart and you have to interact with it. Like I've stymied players with an AI controlled door before because they've got to suddenly interact with this intelligent object that it could be quite fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, giving the item an ego or a backstory or anything, any sort of depth you can put to it, you know, no longer do you have to give the player a +4 sword, +3 sword or whatever. You can give them just a +1 sword that has this depth to it. And all of a sudden it's just as valuable to them as a player as what it would have been if it was all, you know, tweaked out with stats or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also kind of gives a reason why this thing is still sitting around here. Cause that's kind of the big question with any kind of dungeon crawl or, you know, exploration of ruins in MCC. You have to imagine you're not the first people that have stumbled upon this site and tried to like bring stuff up. So if you find something that's really good, either it's super deep in and everyone that, you know, tried before died before they got there, or there's a reason why they didn't end up taking the sweet sword with them that's in like the third room of the dungeon. So finding out the reasons why stuff like that can be found in those regions, I think that's a good thought experiment for any game master.
There's that awesome cartoon that goes around Facebook every year or two of the skeletons in the dungeon selecting the weapons they're going to go on patrol with from the treasure pile. Hey, you want the +2 flamethrower? No, I would like this rusty spear right here. I'm going with that.
Yeah, I often leave signs of the previous adventuring parties, though, so they can, you know, discover them. And it's often with hints of some of the obstacles, especially in MCC. But like Rocky and I do that classically in all the fantasy stuff too. You're guaranteed to find it. Like, I see 3 dead bodies here. Guys, slow down. Something's up here. Yep. We gotta pause and see what's going on.
I also really like using my intelligent magic items as foils. For example, a sword that talks, that doesn't like being with the party, that tries to get them killed all the time. Like just screaming as it's running through the dungeon, help me, get me out of these people's hands. I don't want to go back to the service. But it's a +4 weapon, so they don't want to drop it.
Just draws all the monsters.
Yep.
I've done that on more than one occasion.
Or even sometimes just as a gentle GM hint. Like if they're a little ranged weapon happy. Okay, I've only got 2 charges left. Hang on, I can roleplay this for you right here. I've only got 2 charges left. Are you sure you want to fire me?
So also, while I have this pulled up, just based on the order that we have here, Jim, you are next in discussions of things. And we, of course, here have Mutant Crawl Classics. This is a new cover that's now available. So tell us a little bit about this particular cover right here.
That's Peter Mullen art, which what could you ask for? And of course, I'm a lifelong fan of the way Joe does this, because they'll do a print run, they'll sell out of it. They could just reprint the book and keep it in stock. Joe doesn't do that. We're gonna go get new great art. We're gonna stomp all the typos. And so this is the 4th printing of MCC that just came out. And you know, I wrote, laid out, and art directed the originals. So there's, you know, everything I wrote is still in there, but all the typos are gone. A whole team of people like Michael Curtis have gone through and made little rules, tweaks, and adjustments in response to fan questions, because I didn't do everything right first try. And the layout will shift a little, but the rules and the content are all the same. So it's not an addition. It's just a printing that's got groovy new art on the cover, some new art inside, and a refinement of the text and the copy. I wish I could tell you I had a damn thing to do with the fourth printing, but I didn't. But it's except that I've got it and it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I had to get my hands on one of these because there's two new adventures in it also. Trying to be a completist.
I'm glad you brought that up because they swap out the adventures in the back, and this version has got a Tim Snyder adventure in there that kicks ass.
Is it the train one? No, which one? Is it something completely
new? That's one of his adventures. It's published separately. I wish I could rattle off exactly what the adventure is, but I haven't read it that thoroughly yet.
I may have to get it.
Mine's still in the shrink wrap, so I haven't looked at it yet either. Just got it the other week.
I literally just got it a week ago, so I'm still in the ooh phase.
Luckily, I know a guy. I may be able to get one.
But Tim writes good stuff, so I know it's good.
Yeah, I have the Doug Kovacs third printing here. So that's my copy of MCC.
I have the Kickstarter version around here somewhere, but where somewhere is, I don't know.
I'm not a rich guy, and because I'm not rich, I can't buy a lot of original art, but I bought the original MCC cover art from Doug, so that's on my office wall.
How big was the original?
Shockingly close to print size.
Oh, really?
A little larger, but maybe only like that. I mean, you know.
Amazing.
That's Doug. Doug, what can you say about Doug that hasn't already been said? I mean, there are a whole group of artists, so I only single Doug out. If there's one you had to point to that's the spirit of Dungeon Crawl Classics, it's Doug. I mean, he was there playtesting it, and he's actually literally a co-author of the original game. I mean, a contributor, you know, with Harley and all the guys that the 2 or 3 years they were playtesting it before publication.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've talked about every time MCC or DCC has come up, just how evocative of the ethos of the Dungeon Crawl Classics world Doug's art is, and how it just kind of seals everything up and lets players know immediately, this is the kind of game you're in for.
The wizard has cat knees. Look out. And Peter Mullen, my God, I'd use Peter Mullen in my stuff today with Mud Puppy if I could afford him.
Yeah, color. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's so much in there.
And then something that is coming up for you right now. This will be your next Kickstarter. Issue number 5 of Scientific Barbarian.
We're back, baby, after a year of fulfilling the last one where I got overambitious. Decided to do a giant size issue and a Smithsonian hardcover annual at the same time. And I've learned my lessons from that. All that delivered. It was over a year late, but it's all delivered now. So in the next month or so, this issue 5 will launch. And I'm very excited about this one because we've got like a usual gang of writers. And that includes two of the people in the chat. So Ian's got a new race called Chitterlings that are just little sentient prairie dogs, and you know they're in layout it's only maybe 5 pages long, but it's everything you need to know about them, include you know their social structure, their clan setup, and a little section on how you could run them as a player class if you want to. And I don't want to give away the farm, but I'm dying to talk about how 5 of them get together and jack a suit of
armor. So I'm running that at North Texas as a game. So I have 5 player game MCC. If you want to play the game he's talking about, then that's where you come and play it. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be great.
Spoiler. If somebody comes at you in a suit of power armor, it's full of chitterlings. And the adventure, the mini adventure in this issue was not only written by Lou, but it actually is set between two of his prior MCC adventures, the Time Lost Citadel and Seekers of the Canone. Sorry, my dyslexia can't pronounce that. Oh yeah, yeah. Hold them up there, man. You can. If you don't have those, you need them. They are super deluxe color maps, all kinds of goodness in there, and you could go order those right now at Goodman Games or the Mud Puppy Store. And before I turn this into a commercial, issue 5 has new authors to us. Tim Satley is a big chunk of it. He's an up-and-coming writer who's published some good stuff like Get Me the Juice, and he's got several articles in it. Merle Rasmussen from Top Secret Days. Everybody knows him from Top Secret, but he's written a lot of Starfinder material for Frog God Games, so I got him to come in and write some sci-fi for me. And Bill Barsh has got an article in there that's a preview of their new post-apocalyptic game that's getting ready to kickstart soon, Gamma X. You know, and Jolly Blackburn. And
who is the artist on the cover?
Oh, thank you for getting me to call out Travis Hansen.
Travis Hansen.
Yeah. Who's fabulous and has done interior work for me, illustrations, and will on this too. And you'll know him from Life of the Party. That's his web comic that he shares on Facebook.
Sweet, that's good work.
Fantastic guy.
Yeah, we may have to trade Chet's information for his information.
Right.
Oh, cool. Well, that's a deal. Welcome to how the Independent Publishers Union actually works. People keep wanting to join it. There's no union to join. It's just us trading hot tips on writers and artists.
It's a civil union. We've just been doing it for so long.
A common law union.
That's funny because I feel like I'm married to Tim Cass some days.
And his wife thanks you.
So that'll launch April or May for sure. It's Rocky. I'm like at 20% layout. So one of the lessons I learned is to do what you're doing.
Yep. Be ready before you hit the button.
Absolutely. And I'm going to stop sharing for just a second so I can switch over here to another medium because we also have Lou on here, not to be outdone. Everyone get your copies ready. We all found out that we had Unnatural Selection right here, kind of within arm's reach when we jumped on. So
it's pretty cool too.
I appreciate that, man.
It's a fantastic.
It's just what I wanted.
It's a thick boy.
Absolutely. It's a thick
boy. I know you said you're like room for expansions. I'm like, what? Like three monsters.
Next Kickstarter will just be for the extra binder you need.
Yeah, it's gonna have to be. Let me know. We'll release a monster set and fill your binder. Just do the binder.
Yeah, that was a thing. I wish I had gone with the two inch binder there.
No, it's still manageable though. Like it's still I'll use that. Like I can move it to a table easy. It's great.
Everybody's mileage may vary, but I am a fan of 6x9 and adjacent sizes rather than the big 8.5x11 because this will go in my game bag.
Hmm. Yeah, well, the main thing, I mean, obviously this is like a ripoff of the Monsters Compendium, and that was the thing with that is, you got that, and then they ended up printing two monsters on each side of the page because you can't really fill a full double-sided page with one monster for some monsters. So the only way that worked out is if you shrunk it down to a journal size, and then it, you know, pretty much any monster you got, you can, you know, get it on there and almost fill both sides. But so that was kind of a necessity to have it at that size. But you're right, it does play better at the table that way, and you can pull the sheets you need, and they don't take up much space if you even want to slim it down more.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to go to the giant skunk picture, but that's just where we landed.
It looked like you had it bookmarked.
Can I brag on that book, Lou?
Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously, it's thick. There's hundreds of monsters in there, and most of them are new, but there are also some revisits to classic MCC monsters that in the core rule book I had this much of a column to talk about, and Lou's greatly expanded them.
Yeah, they were really nice to me at Goodman. They said, hey, you know, tell us what you want to, you know, put into it that's from, you know, our core books, and they let me have everyone I asked for. And the idea is to try to get like one source, you know, that you can go to that'll have, you know, every monster you're looking for in over time. So kind of hoping to revisit that this summer with some more monsters that are new and a few more that are classic, you know, legacy monsters, like, you know, the ones that you'd put in the book. So we had some Tibbers in there and the C-Rex and, you know, a lot of the fan favorites. So
I saw the Glaskins in there.
Yeah.
Everybody's been doing the Tibbers. I think it was it.
Yeah, Tim Sadley did the Badass Bunnies.
Like the reverse where you're the Tibbers and just did that for a zine quest, I believe.
Now the binder thing is, I think it's really cool. I was not around for Monstrous Compendium because I'm the youngest one here by quite a ways, shall we say. But it's one of those interesting artifacts. Whenever you go back to like second edition stuff, a good example of this is Dark Sun. You get the Dark Sun stuff off a drive-through RPG, and you have a lot of these monsters and things that are essentially in a binder format. They've got, you know, three holes on the PDF, and so it's an interesting kind of callback to that that time where TSR was experimenting with the binder format. Didn't seem to catch on then, but it's really great. Cool.
I loved it. But the problem TSR had with it was they printed it so cheaply. If they would have put it on 10 or 12 pound heavier paper, everybody would have used it all the time.
I'm telling you, man, if they'd made it this size, it would have been a monster success.
Yep, that too. I loved it for years and years. I refused to go over to the hardback when they had printed that because it was just so much easier for me to throw it all into one notebook and flip a page and there's my map and there's all my monsters right on that next page. Plus, several pages.
I mean, Ryan, at the time this stuff came out, it was prior to Edition Wars because it was only the second edition. So at that time, the only thing was, do you play AD&D or do you play the baby's D&Ds?
And that was
my teenage attitude. I no longer consider
that wasn't even really a thing for me. It was, do you play D&D? Then come sit down and let's play.
So, you know, the Monstrous Compendium, our major reaction was, oh, they took the devils and demons out. Well, that's okay. We've still got them in this book. Let's just, exactly. But we've got new rules. Let's just buy it and keep playing. Mm-hmm. We're still just playing D&D.
Yeah, I just had this mindset that, you know, over time, all these, you know, the creature catalog and the, you know, Monster Manuals 1 and 2, Fiend Folio, eventually it all come to one spot. And that was my hopes and dreams at that point in my life for the Monsters Compendium, but it never really panned out that way, the way they had printed it. So,
Frog got the Tome of Horrors complete, which was pretty close, though.
Yeah, and I will say the one thing I'm hoping on this product is that I've kind of put the trade dress out there for free for anybody that wants to, you know, have it, small publishers, whoever. It's in InDesign, so that may be a limiting factor for some folks. But my hopes and dreams that other people will grab it and you know, use that to make their own monsters so that, you know, we can all have all our stuff all together for folks. You know?
It's visionary, man.
It is.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I really like about kind of the ethos around Mutant Crawl Classics and Dungeon Crawl Classics. Because Goodman has been so kind of, you know, good about working with people who are creating kind of in and around the community, a lot of the stuff is very uniform. It looks the same. It feels familiar. So if you've read through DCC and you happen to pick up like Weird Frontiers, everything makes sense. Everything clicks. Everything, you know, works. It's a cool thing for anyone who is kind of looking for a system that has a lot of community content, but it all feels like it belongs together, which a lot of times when you look at like third-party D&D content, your mileage can vary as far as the look and feel of what you're given. So, you know, that's something that I've really enjoyed about MCC and DCC.
Well, I mean, the aspects you're talking about of MCC are just copied and inherited from DCC. I mean, Joseph did a lot of genius moves when he created and launched Dungeon Crawl Classics, but one of the best was his early on decision to embrace third-party publishers and fan publications, because there's a, you know, it's not binary. There's a continuum there. And right from the start, I mean, and that's been a while ago. That's been nearly 10 years ago. So now we're on like third or fourth generation people coming into the game, reacting like you're reacting now and going, hey, I can do this too. That's fantastic. Mm. What a way to build a base of support for a game system, because it works.
Yeah. Well, I think there's another company out there that might, you know, want to take a bit of that wisdom.
Oh, let's don't start that.
I mean, that was like right around the time the OGL drama first started. One of my thoughts was that DCC kind of had the blueprint for what a good community of third party content could look like, and you know, wondering why it hadn't become the standard. But I don't even want to get into that, because that whole thing just still is so
irritating. Well, let's spin back around to the positive and constructive thing, because there are two companies, and I'm representative of neither of them. You know, I don't currently work for Goodman Games, but Goodman Games for what we're talking about, and Tom Tullis and Fat Dragon Games for 3D Minis. Both those guys figured out that the way to do it is to offer a free license, and it comes with rules and it has to be approved. Like if you want to take Tom's mini files and be a printer and vend printed versions of the game, it's an easy license. It doesn't cost anything. There are no royalties. You just have to fill out the paperwork, get approved, and off you go. And Joe's licenses for DCC and MCC are of the same kind, where it's a free license. You're not paying him anything. In fact, Joe will not only approve the book, he'll buy, you know, a bunch of copies and sell them in his web store.
Hmm. Yeah. And then so you got
out there listening, and you're just new to DCC or MCC and you want to join the party, you know, there's go to their website, send an email. You can do it too.
Yeah. I was going to throw out there that they've got the Road Crew too, which is just a fantastic organization for, you know, supporting people that are out there trying to run these games and running them in libraries, schools, even, you know, community centers. They're just fantastic with the fans they have and with supporting those fans. I can't say enough good about Goodman Games.
You run enough games in a year, you'll get a brass belt buckle. That's pretty good. Cool.
Yeehaw.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. So while we've got some time here, because we got through a lot of the products that you guys have released or will be releasing soon, what's everyone's game in your home, in your kind of private gaming time? What's that been like for you guys recently? Let's just kind of go around. Jim, you are on my right here, so I guess we'll start with you.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the worst example. Ever since the pandemic, except for con games, I mean, first our game store closed down and our group fell apart. And recently, Gateway Games, the birthplace of MCC, shuttered its doors. So I'm working on a new RPG I don't want to get into because it's not related to what we're talking about. And I'll be trying to reform a group sometime in the next year. But it's been online and running con games for me. Mm-hmm. And anytime any of these guys run an online game, I'll jump in and play, because we always run games we never get to play.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Unfortunately, it's kind of been the same for me. I am currently a man without a game right now myself, so.
It's been a tough few years with everything that's happened, but it's all coming back.
Mm-hmm. We had a situation where our physical group became a digital group during COVID, and we've never recoalesced as a physical group. Some of them, like myself, would love to get back to physically rolling dice together, and Others like, well, man, you know, it's less driving. We, you know, can spend more time actually gaming. We can game more often in smaller chunks. And that's really kind of changed the whole chemistry of you know, what an adventure needs to look like and how a campaign progresses. It's been kind of interesting.
Yeah, so I have a regular group that I've been playing with for ages, what seems like decades now at this point, probably is. But and that's a mix of people who are like digitally jumping in and people who are physically there, because it's just guys from the group who've moved away and still want to keep gaming. We also just, I game some with the kids. I game some with some boys at a lockdown school every week. And we just came back from TotalCon as well. So we did a lot of gaming, but I squeeze in, you know, 2 to 5 games a week, I'd say, depending on the week.
I have not done a lot of gaming since 2020. The lung cancer really knocked me on my ass for a while. I feel like I'm finally back in the saddle, though. I ran a couple of playtests of the game I ran at TotalCon. I ran my game at TotalCon really well. So I am right now putting together a group for every other Tuesday up in Muskegon. I'm also going to be doing an online friend game and an online kids game coming up in the next couple of months. So I will have 3 games that are going to run in the same world where they can interact with each other is my goal sometime before summer starts.
So Ryan said he was the youngest. Would that give him a slot in the kids game or the adult game? He could choose.
he could come in the adult game, but either my oldest or your oldest is probably going to be the oldest one in the kids game.
I know there are a lot of grognards that I don't want any kids at my table. I love it. If I'm running it, I love it. And if that thing Skeeter ran for us with me, yeah, you guys, and your kids in there, that was fantastic. I'm all about it because, you know, the next generation's got to come from somewhere because, you know, our time's going to be up one of these days.
Yeah, my oldest son is also starting a game on Sunday at the local library. So there's a whole lot of gaming that is starting to sprout up now that I feel that I am safe to go back out into the real world.
You might be better off with that group. Our kids actually are the survivors of like Stefan Picorni's child's game, yep, massacre at Game Hole Con, where he took more heads than made it out. So, so they know what they're doing in a mega dungeon in old school games for sure.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, Siobhan, forget about it.
Victor Gorchev in chat here is just dropping straight truth. Bunch of hunks up in here.
Flattering.
This is going to end up upsetting
my wife.
So this might end up upsetting some of my old role-playing friends from back in Charlotte. But my whole gaming group was at my wedding when my wife and I got married. And my mom pulled me aside after looking at them and said, "Ryan, you're a D&D 10. And then my little sister, who's very quick on the draw, goes out of 20.
Oh.
And then Orcus Dorcas here, running games for kids is a blast. And I'm glad that he's here and you guys are mentioning kind of next generation of gamers because Scott here, Orcus Dorcas, has like the next generation of gamers kind of on lock with his son and his friends playing role-playing games. So it really is cool to see the way that young people approach the game.
Because they don't come with decades of baggage. Right. Mm-hmm. But they're super sharp, super smart, and they're thinking outside the box like crazy. Like you'll have one of those bottlenecks in a dungeon and a 12-year-old will figure out a solution like that while the rest of us are going through our spells.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, exactly.
Well, that energy they have, you know, as they're experiencing that for the first time, whatever it is, it feeds back to you as a DM. You're like, oh, yeah, I remember why I love
vampire that energy.
Yep.
And it teaches them to interact with each other and like figure out a bunch of problems, you know, under pressure without killing each other. Or hopefully they only kill a couple of each other, but not everybody.
Yeah, there normally is that little kind of, you know, getting used to the water thing where the first couple minutes of any game with youth is, yes, you can kill him, but you don't have to kill your friend. You guys can work together.
Yeah, I know, right? But after a couple deaths, you know, that's why you use an old school system. Like roll up another character. It'll be in 3 minutes.
Plus, God knows at convention games, we get adults that play like kids. And, you know, you'll get a cowboy at the table. And that's fun, too. You just got to manage it. Like, okay, you hold them back until it's the boss fight at the end and the potential TPK, then cut them loose.
Yep. And Vic, don't be down on yourself here. You're not a two. I've told you multiple times you're the Netherlands' number one sex symbol. So yeah, just keep that in mind. Cal's right. You're a seven.
Solid seven.
Victor, that accent thing is absolutely true in America, man. That'll bump you up halfway up the scale, man.
Yep. Although they're not as into the Southern accent.
No, it's got to be four. It's got to be, you know.
It's true. Yeah.
Depends on where you go. You get up into the like Maine area and they don't hear that Southern accent all the time. They get a little more excited.
But then you have the deep Maine accent. You got to throw
Yeah. Pretty soon you can't understand each other up there.
I completely got rid of my Kentucky accent, and the older I get, it's like that Star Trek episode where they catch the aging disease that Dr. McCoy was. The older I get, the more it's creeping in now.
Yeah, I expect like full Colonel Sanders by the time you're just relaxing.
I could turn it back on, but you don't want to hear it.
That's what my next.
No offense to my home state.
Linen suit. See, if I had that cardboard standee, I could put it in a linen suit.
Charlie Blackburn thought that was hilarious that I wouldn't share the standee company name with you guys. I'm like, oh, no, no, I'm not cutting them loose with that.
I'm just gonna cut out the middleman and go straight to Jolly. I'll have to make a fake Facebook profile and catfish them just to get the name of the cardboard standee maker.
You know, fight me if you wish, sir, but I'm old for a reason. Careful what you start.
All right, now I've just got to open this up. And I will open this up to not just you guys, but everyone in chat as well. Who in the IPU would you most like to have a cardboard standee of in your house?
Depends on how much space you have. Like, where are you
asking us, right? Or are you asking chat?
I'm asking everybody, you guys included.
IPU, huh?
I would definitely want one of Ian so that when I get mad at him, I can throw darts at him.
Fair enough.
Well, okay. I think it should be Jeff Talanian, and allow me to explain why. He's not here to defend himself. And I think I could easily pitch him through a couple of carefully constructed memes as gaming's internet dad, like Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, and I think I'd like a Delanian too, because I feel like I could put an angry quote, like stick it to him, and it like would, and like it would motivate bubble. Me. Yeah,
see,
like,
I was kind of thinking that on Peter,
you get it, you know, like something to
for you getting push me over the cardboard edge. Cut out of Skeeter, and you let an F-bomb fly on accident. You're like, it's him, man.
Oh, the problem with the cardboard stand up of Skeeter is it won't last long because he'll just.
The problem with the cardboard cutout of Skeeter is someday that room's going to be dark and you're going to walk in and it's going to freak you out.
See, I would want a cardboard of Levi just for the comfort of, you know, knowing that Levi is watching and approving of the games that we're playing. Is
watching. See, I picked Jeff because he's the sexiest among us, but Levi can pull the best faces out of the group. Levi can pull a face in a picture like nobody's business.
I saw some movie on Netflix the other day And like I was scrolling through in the cover and I didn't have my glasses on and I went, holy shit, it looked just like Levi from a distance. I had to put my glasses on and go, oh, it's like, what the? I'm seeing some like Spanish romance film? What is going on here?
I just think this is a bad idea in general because I've seen how it goes at GaryCon when I will edit all names out of this, but certain friends among us and that may or may not include anybody here got into the, you know, the David Hasselhoff pillowcases being snuck into hotel rooms.
It was Nick Cage.
I remember a couple of Gamehole cons ago, a couple of them paying artists to do caricatures, you know, foul caricatures of each other.
That was Levi. I have that in the other room. I could grab that. That's going to go in a book. I just haven't.
It's going to be not the right book yet.
I think I almost want it to be a cover. I could.
Lou, if you want something like that, let me tell you exactly the plan. Go to North Texas Con, go find Lloyd Metcalf and find out when the artists get together is, because that's just a whole two to three tables of artists and just show up for that and go, here's what I need. And you'll get like four versions.
Yeah, I tried to. I missed the tail end of that last time. I came in just as everybody's leaving the table there in the restaurant.
You're like, what? I scared you guys off? What the? Right, I just got here. Yeah, that was Ed Bickford, and he was like, I had a really slow day. That was the year just after like the COVID year, first COVID year of Game Hall, so it was slow that day. So I said, I'll commission something. And then I commissioned something ridiculous.
That's the best too, man.
Now, one thing I will say about the Skeeter cutout is that'd be great to put in like the front window or right next to the door so that like the Amazon guy or, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses or whoever it is that's coming up to your door has to contend with just Skeeter looking at them.
You'd have to do the train track thing so it like moved windows. Yeah. It just kept.
Or the Home Alone where instead of it being Michael Jordan that's moving back and forth, it's Skeeter.
It's just Skeeter eyeballing you out the window.
Here's a rando question to Jim and Ian and Rocky, maybe, because I don't know you as well as them. But you guys do some art for your books. Ian, I know you do maps, and Jim, you're an artist. Do you guys, like, I've done some art that I put in my books simply for budgetary reasons. I don't think I'm some great artist or anything, but do you guys have that little voice in the back of your head that's like, no, you shouldn't include your own stuff in this book? Or what do you guys think of that?
I don't have that voice in my head. Not anymore. But that was the process of me just accepting the fact that if I need Jeff D art, I can do something that's going to be 15 or 20% as good as a Jeff D. So if I need Jeff D art, I should just go hire Jeff D. Let me explain it better. I had to get comfortable with the idiosyncrasies of my own Bigfoot cartooning style, which is generally not appropriate for my needs, but I can work hard and pump it up. And sometimes, like you said, it's just a matter of practicality. It's a last minute art need. There's not time to go get somebody. And if it's a Marvin the Mage cartoon, I'll do one for you. I don't care.
Let's see. That's a weird question. I don't know. I guess I've done
with the maps
a couple art things, but the maps, that just was something I just decided we needed to. We couldn't really afford a lot of cartography, and cartography is expensive. So I just kept practicing and kept practicing and kept practicing.
But it's a passion of yours too.
Yeah, I mean, I do like doing it. Like, I was always the one who was drawing the map, and you know, when I was 12. And like finding, because you can find secret doors and stuff that way. For those of you who don't map and don't have someone who maps, that's how you find the secret doors. It's not with rolls. You just look and you say, well, shit, the secret door would fit right there. Let's search that wall. And you'll often be right.
Yeah, and I'm just not an artist at all. I do layout. I can write a lot, but putting a pen in my hand, you can't even read my handwriting. There's no way you're going to understand what my drawings are. But Ian actually had art in the first issue of Fantastic Geographic. All of the dungeon doors, he had done the art for all those.
Oh, really?
That was. We're like, shit, we need a door. And like, yep. We don't want a, you know, $65 door. Like, I can do a, just like Jim said, I can do a $10.50 door.
Yeah.
So, but that's, and then one of, I think, in some of the Mutant Girl Classics adventures, that some of the room moves, like the room maps or the room drawings are mine, like the geothermal yep. reactor and fire in the mole is mine. But with a tremendous amount of like shading support from Bickford. And he's like, oh, you just do this. And I'm like, wait, whoa. Like, show me the layers, man. Show me the layers. And then I could kind of pick it up. Not nearly as Bickford-y as Bickford can do it, but you know, a good 30%.
I like working with young artists. To whatever level that involves, if it's just somebody that I'm wanting to hire on, and every book I try and bring in new people, or at least new to me, but you know, early stage people that are just breaking in along with the usual crew of great artists I have. And sometimes, and not always, that evolves later into a more of a mentorship thing. And I don't mean it in any big fancy way. It's just in some levels, it's just part of being an art director. But Keelan Haverson is a great example where he and I have now talked for years, and our styles aren't anything alike. It's not about that. It's just, you know, what are the pro tips for our industry? And then because I'm an artist, I'm a pretty good art director, you know, what's working and what's not working. And Ed and I have gotten super tight that way, where we, you know, we'll get on Zoom call for just a practical to talk about one illustration for one book, and it'll turn into, you know, a discussion of Neil Adams, John Buscema, and Jack Kirby and Mike Mignola, and we'll just go to town. And I love that, because it's not a one-way street either. It's very much interactive. James V. West
and,
is another.
And like you said, like you'll like, even not that you're job hunting for them, but you know, you'll put them in touch with people who, you know, could use their stuff. And I think we'll treat them right, which is important.
Yeah. I'm not going to discuss any situations, but yeah, who's good to work for and who to stay away from, you know, yeah, and then in the proper professional way, this was my experience, you know, this is what I saw, not, you know, just being obnoxious on somebody.
And that's one of the really cool things about kind of this network that is the Independent Publishers Union is you've seen, guys like Adrian Linderos, who was one of Casey's art students. Casey started using him, Levi started using him, and now suddenly his art's everywhere because it's amazing.
Yeah,
that's cool that there's a network of people who are looking for, you know, art for their books, and they're, you know, willing to take a chance on someone who's new if they do good work for one of you guys. So, you know, that's something that I like to see, especially as someone who's, you know, taking his first steps into creating games. So,
I mean, we picked the name Independent Publishers Union because it sounded good, not because it's an actual union. That's all it is. It's just, six of us who are friends, and we trade hot tips, and we split booth costs at game conventions,
and booth labor, more importantly, even I think than costs, right? Like, you can't run games and sell books. Like, there's got to be a balance somewhere, and you sell books by running games at conventions, so it's like a catch 22. So I think that, you know, that's a lot of why we banded together. And you see other people who've done this, like Jared Nielsen's kind of done this with the game design, World of Game Design. Some of those guys like have all banded together the same way to share booth costs, be able to sell a bunch of books. It's, you know, it's, people are going to linger longer if there's a wider variety of product.
Yeah, the diversity of our table. I mean, it all falls within a certain frame, but the diversity at our table makes it irresistible.
Yeah, there's literally, if you're gaming, there's something
for you. Yep.
For everybody, yeah.
Oh, and you like this cover? Well, Ed's booth is over there in Artist Row, right there.
Exactly.
That's one of the things I like is that you guys have been together so long that you know each other's products. So I've multiple times been talking with one of y'all and somebody will come up and they're looking at something and that guy's not there. And you guys just kind of shuffle on over. And, oh, let me tell you about this. You know, it's, you know.
Yeah, I think we all read each other's stuff, though. But we read your stuff, too. So I could talk about your products if I needed to. I'm available for the booth, Lou, if you need.
I mean, everybody can do what they want, but I'm even good with both ends of the character arc. Okay, you know, you bring in somebody that's new, and they work for you. Then they start to work for more and more people, and their works become popular, and then their works become real popular, and they reach a point where their rates need to go up because they've got more work than they can handle. And if it ends as it has occasionally, and then graduating to the big leagues outside of our range is pretty wide because we've got Jeff at the top, you know, but if Del Tegeler suddenly gets hired by Watsy or something, you know, and can't work for me anymore, I just want to be the kind of publisher that says good on you. That's the way it's supposed to work, because that's just more motivation for me to go find new people and help them get in. Does that sound preachy? I don't mean it preachy. It's just that's how I like to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's just highlighting another aspect of the IPU, right? Like, we all find ways, the people around us that are helping us build our books, we're all trying to elevate them to be the best of what they're doing. And that's just one example of it.
And everybody's different. And that's the key. That's what I find is the key to being a good editor or a good art director, is just to try and meet the person where they're at. One artist that hasn't come up yet, but because she doesn't do a lot of work, is Alla Fedorova. I freaking love everything she's ever done for me. But, you know, she's in a different life place. This is not her future career. You know, she's got, you know, a job and other things. Yep. So she's got a very narrow set of windows. And sometimes she can do stuff and sometimes she can't. And that's great.
You know, and give it's me gotta what you be got. Something that, yeah, catching Alla to do something for you is like catching fairy dust. We've got a piece or two by her too. That's
like, she's smarter than she's not trying to do this for a living.
And she is a great artist, but good luck.
I just stuck Ryan so you could share it. Was that's actually the link to the print of the cover of Fantastic Geographic. If people did dig that old UA shout out cover, you can buy it directly from Chet as a 9x12 print.
Yep. I will go ahead and drop that in chat here.
Speaking of encodes,
I picked mine up at TotalCon. I think, Ian, you got one at TotalCon too, right?
Yeah.
How did that go this year? Big attendance?
It was great. It was my first time being a special guest at a convention, so it was really special for me. But it was a fantastic convention. It always runs pretty well. Plenty of games are played. Like I said, I got to actually run my first game since 2020, pretty much. And that went really well. So, like, I have no complaints about TotalCon this year at all.
Yeah, it was great. Like, all the guests and people there were awesome. Okay, like, playing games were, I didn't have a single bad table. Like, everybody who sat down was there to game and play a serious game and have a good time. And it was a blast.
Awesome.
Yeah, Ryan, like the four of us together are as good as one Tim Cast, because you ask us one question from chat and we talk for 20 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as we're kind of running up against our time here, unfortunately, Jim, you won't be at North Texas this year. You will be at GaryCon, though. So anyone who's going to GaryCon, say hi to Jim. Are you running games at GaryCon?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but they're already full, so. If you're listening, come crash a table, and if you're nice to me, I might let you in.
Absolutely. But for those of us who will be at North Texas RPG Convention, I just want to go ahead and show everyone, because a lot of the events are already posted. Everyone here, except for Jim, has events that they are running at North Texas RPG Convention. So starting with Rocky, Mega Dungeon Madness, which I have heard described as kind of the greatest hits of your favorite Mega Dungeons.
That's absolutely correct. It's what I ran at TotalCon, and it was an absolute blast. I playtested it two or three times before that, and nobody has taken the same path through the dungeon. TotalCon actually got me to play through every room, finally, that I'd put into the map. I'm also planning on adding two more events relatively soon from one of our upcoming Kickstarters. I just haven't gotten around to getting to schedule them yet. From getting back from TotalCon, like I said, I wanted to make sure that I was up to snuff, and I think I am. So if you're coming to North Texas, be watching for that in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to add two more games. Hmm.
And don't be discouraged by the 0-3 available. These are just the pre-sale, pre-April 15th half-seat availability. So you can still get in on all of these games if you are fast on the night of April 15th. So next up is Lou.
Yep. Yes, we get the podcasters. I'm hoping you'll roll down for that. So we got the breakfast there for everybody in the podcast community that wants to hang out and just chit-chat with each other, maybe get some people interviewed that are walking around. Starfall, I don't know if you guys ever played D6 Star Wars. I think, Ian, you're a big D6 Star Wars guy, right? Oh, in my opinion, that adventure, Starfall, is maybe the best adventure I've ever read or ran. Someone run that at the convention, just kind of old school kickback. And then there's It Bites. So my next big project is a new gaming system. Well, it's a second edition of a gaming system. I came out a long time ago, my first company, but it's called Movies Till Dawn. This is the old cover from a long time ago, but you're playing B-movie actors and actresses who take on different roles in each adventure, which is a B-movie. And so you've got kind of some layering there where you've got your idiosyncrasies as an actor, but then you also have the characters, you know, idiosyncrasies that you're portraying. And it's a real wild mix of kind of like a whose line is it anyways, with a role-playing game mixed in there too. Plays with a deck of regular cards instead of dice. There's stuff that goes on in the movie, and then there's stuff that goes on backstage that you can use the suit of diamonds to affect things like, I don't know, poisoning the craft food table so the other actors are too sick to take lead. it was a good and fun game back when I first published it, but my company kind of died just as it was catching some tread. So this time around, I've tweaked a couple rules I didn't like, and so we're play testing it the first time of this new version there at North Texas. And then there's also, I don't think it's been posted yet, but I'm doing a MCC. My next MCC adventure is Raven's Rest, which might seem similar to people to a certain Raven's other product, dealing with vampires. But in Raven's Rest, you stumble upon an old retirement home where the inhabitants have been digitized, made into holographic entities. And they're convinced that it's the best way of life and everybody needs to join them. So it's kind of got that vampire feel to it.
That's brilliant, man.
That's great.
Kind of an AI Bubba Hotep, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
With a little cocoon slipped in there.
Absolutely.
Just a touch of ascension.
And then Ian... We've got Hail Caesar Salad and Moltron Assemble.
Yeah, I don't know why I named that one of them out that way. I've got another one I'll be putting into that'll be fantasy RPG, but the first one is the Plantient Death Cult Funnel, the Hail Caesar Salad, and it is the quietest arena you've ever met, and you will battle to free yourself from whatever horrors are in the Death Plants arena. So that's that one. That one should be a blast. And then the other one is the one, the chitterling one that Jim is talking about. And it's Moltron Assemble. So it's a group of five little groundhog people trying to assemble a Voltron-like machine to battle a giant Caillou on the glowing plants. So it should be super awesome. I'm really looking forward to it.
And then to round things out, I've got my games. Let's see. So, Hard Time, Nighthaven Hard Time. These are all set in my kind of urban Fofford and the Gray Mouser meets Sin City world that I've created called Nighthaven. First game, Hard Time. Hard Time will be running on Friday afternoon. In that one, you have to break into Talon Isle Prison, which is the most impregnable prison on Nighthaven. It's the Alcatraz of Nighthaven, but there's one person who may or may not even still be alive that you need who has been there for a very long time. And then the Rot Runs Deep, which I'll be running Thursday morning. This is a sewer crawl. You are in search of missing persons that you've been tracking for forever. All of your leads take you down into the sewer. However, because this is a role-playing game and sewers are notoriously dangerous in fantasy cities, you are not alone down there. And there's no telling what might await you. And then last on... Saturday evening, I will be running Day of Reckoning. This one is actually set 30 years before kind of my main Nighthaven timeline. And this will be kind of playing around with some mass combat rules that I'm working on tinkering with. So it'll be a little experimental, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. This is set during what's called the Battle of Nighthaven. Essentially, you are commandos who are trying to take back over the city of Nighthaven, which has been ruled by a dragon and his retainers for the past 10 years or so. So that's what you can expect from my games at North Texas, and that's what you can expect from everyone here at North Texas.
Dude, Fofford and the Gray Mouser meet Sin City is the best elevator pitch. I mean, you could take that to Comic-Con in San Diego. That's fantastic.
I appreciate it.
So Ryan, I always... get around to asking this to you, like, where are you on the prospects of formalizing this into a product here?
So I'm actively working on it. It's just a matter of getting everything together, finding someone who can help me with layouts, and then figuring out what I want to do as far as art. Because here's the problem that I've run into. I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I also really, really want Nighthaven to be a box set.
Oh, okay. Don't do that.
Okay.
there's your advice right there. Do not do that. Yeah. I watched Zach Glazer make the most artisanal quality deluxe box set ever and not make a penny on it. Box sets are hard.
All right.
And you can cut your teeth on an adventure too and get it out there and...
I'm sorry, that was very negative. Or prove me wrong.
I know, he just really peed on your parade, huh? That was.
No, I mean, we've all got
you do those. A box set.
Tim Cast's got them, never do a yellow cover. They don't sell.
Technically, okay, anything you don't ship in an envelope is a box set, so.
That's true.
I also want to do a box set someday, Ryan, so I feel you.
Yeah. But that setting sounds fantastic. You should definitely. Yeah. Do that.
You guys should team up and do a box set. I'm out.
But kind of what Jim was saying there, I would make Nighthaven adjacent products that are smaller products and then get that art money coming in, from kickstarting those and actually making a little profit, which is kind of fun sometimes.
And then you'll have an art set up for when you do a big source book or a box set that you'll. It'll be there.
Mm-hmm. I watched Zach do it, and his product was next level, especially for a first-time indie publisher. It was next level.
Yeah, it was top gorgeous, notch.
Beautiful. I have both of them back on my shelves, but I watched.
And I was just saying, if you're going to do a box set, don't include minis.
Yeah, I was not planning on minis, but
or dice. That's expensive. Four, and hard. Four dice.
Yeah, because it's not medium ale if there's dice in there. Mm-hmm.
Dice is one I had to learn the hard way.
But yeah, I do think, and I'll have to see how things go with the adventures that I'm running, but there's a lot of stuff around these adventures that I'm doing at North Texas that I feel like could eventually turn into some kind of product that I can publish. So we'll see how well received they are by the people playing in them.
Any one of those ideas sounded great to me. Like, everybody loves a prison break. Like, the whole, like, going back to revisit, like, oh no, this is the calamity. I love doing that in my own games too, when you've got a long-standing campaign where you're like, all right, flashback episode, and you, like, suddenly so everybody gets to play a hero in another. Like, that's a blast. It's a fun game. So
you get, I feel like, ideas. There's a dearth of really great city settings too. I mean, there are plenty that are great, but there's not as many as there are all the other stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when I was first putting together the idea, I was looking at doing it for DCC, but then, I mean, Lankmar's right there.
Yeah.
That would make it very, very hard to differentiate. Because at this point, I'd just be like, well, yeah, this is Lankmar, but it's darker.
Well, Castles and Crusades is a great system.
Yeah, yep. And that's what I'm leaning on right now, is I'm running these in C&C, so I think that'll end up being where it lands.
And if you did DCC, you'd have to consider, like, that, if you are leaning Lankmar, like, there's some funky mechanics they've added in there, mm-hmm. too, that adjust things.
Yeah. Ryan, have you ever talked to the trolls?
I haven't. I need to. I need to talk to the Chenaults, but...
Yeah, they're great guys. I haven't had much personal dealings with them, but from what I've heard and from the little I've been around them, talking with them, I mean, they run their own print, their own presses. I mean, that's another thing, is, you know, might be able to see what they can do as far as, you know, walking you through the process and what would or wouldn't be possible. But yeah, it sounds like awesome stuff, man. Listen to a couple of your playthroughs on the online here, and it's cool stuff.
Troll Lords published my podcast mates Mike Stewart's Victorious game.
Cool. All right. Well, I need to get back to work.
I'm sorry, man. You shared some great ideas, and we blasted you with advice.
It's all good. It's just the.
Just keep typing.
Yeah. And that's typing. Really, I've been working on this for at least 2 years at this point. So it's just a matter of finalizing all of my ideas, getting everything together, and then working through those details.
Do it.
But that is, we're a little over time actually, but that's going to do it for tonight's episode. So guys, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a lot of fun. I enjoyed having you guys on here.
Yeah, this is a great lineup.
Yeah, it's been an honor to be included, man.
These are my favorite guys. Thanks for having us.
They're my favorite guys, too, so.
I'm going to blush.
All right, well, that's going to do it for Rolling Bones this week. Next week, guys, I am going to have kind of an interesting, unique episode. My friend John TGG is coming on, and we're going to talk about music. We're going to talk about how music inspires our campaigns, what kind of music we like to listen to prepare ourselves for gaming, music in gaming. We're going to have a whole music conversation as it relates to role-playing. So I hope you guys will join us next week for that. I'm looking forward to it. John's looking forward to it. It's going to be a great conversation. So until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I am so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time.